It's Tuesday, 24th of April, and you're listening to the Game Green Greencast, your guide to the world of gaming news from the past week. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Hamilton.
Hello.
And Catty.
Are you sure it's not March?
I'm sure.
You maybe look at the calendar then.
Yeah, I realized before we started recording that so far this month I've been saying it's Tuesday the whatever of March. When in fact it's April.
For every April podcast.
Yes. And nobody has noticed.
And this is the last April podcast.
Yeah. Right, obviously, since I've reached Catty already, that means there's no one else here. Very limited cast, but we'll try and pack it full of talking about games, at least. So, I know, Catty, you have a lot to talk about, so let's not go for you first. Hamilton, what have you been up to?
Saving the best for last with Catty. I have been consumed by God of War the last week or so. My word, that game is good. So good, I wanted to rev my motorcycle.
It's, yeah, everyone seems to like it.
It has a series, considering the series, surprising amount of depth in it. It's incredibly narratively deep. The gameplay is incredible. The combat's like so fluid. Kratos is a more nuanced, well-rounded character. The take on Norse mythology is really well done. It turns it on its head. I won't say much because of spoilers, but it does revert some of the tropes. Looks fantastic even on my non-4K television and my normal PS4. Just all round very good game, and definitely is going to be up there for Game of the Year. I'm sure it's on many people's Game of the Year lists already. Yeah, it's pretty damn good, and if anyone's thinking about buying it, they should buy it, because I think this is Sony continues its year, and this is the generation that it's won, and it's just sort of stamping that mark now on the generation with titles like this and Horizon Zero Dawn and the rest that they've had. Just more of the same from Santa Monica as well.
I've not picked up any PlayStation 4 exclusives in a long time.
I've not picked up any PlayStation 4 games in a long time.
Is that because you don't have a PlayStation 4?
That is because I don't have a PlayStation 4.
I would buy a PlayStation 4.
This year it's been tempting because I know Spider-Man's coming out, and despite being exceptionally sceptical about there being a good Spider-Man game again, the more I see of that game and the more they sort of talk about it, the more interested I am in it.
It's Insomniac. It's going to be
good. That too.
Right, so you're not interested in PlayStation 4 except for a title in June. What have you been doing?
I have been playing Stardew Valley on my Switch endlessly. I can't stop. Please, someone, come to my house and take it away from me. I've been playing that a lot. But I've also been playing Radical Heights, the not Lawbreakers thing. And I think people have been giving it a harder time than they necessarily should have. Yes, it's unfinished, and yes, they really shouldn't have released it yet, but it's more fun than Fortnite and PUBG, in my opinion. It runs better than PUBG ever did on my computer, despite the fact that for the first week it didn't run at all. And every time I load it up, it says that I've not got enough RAM to run it. I don't have a frame rate issue in that game. I've never been able to play PUBG without dropping below 30 FPS. And Fortnite, the building just makes that game impossible to play if you're not gonna be, like, into that game. Whereas I think Radical Heights is a nice mix between the two. You don't have to really worry too much about being leech strats. You just have to play the game and have fun. My biggest concern is that because of how badly received it has been at the start, they're not going to finish it. And I'm still in a month's time, still going to be walking into buildings that have no textures on the walls.
Is this the perhaps the beginning? We'll get to Stardew Valley in a moment because we know that's great. But is this the beginning of the blowback against cash grab battle royale games? Perhaps people are fine with Fortnite and PUBG, and that's all we need.
I doubt it, because later this year we're going to get every AAA game under the sun coming with a battle royale mode.
It's like zombies, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, I saw someone on Twitter posting up a E3 bingo card, and it's just releases battle royale mode, just in all the squares.
Has like Sims battle royale and things like that.
But I don't think it's difficult, because this game is free, and I don't think there is a reason to buy the. There's like a £12. I'm just trying to check the actual price before I really get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's like $11.99. I don't know what it does, and I've never seen anyone with it, or anyone who looks like they've got something that I don't.
According to Steam charts, the player level seems to have leveled out about 2,000 or so over the past few days. They had a spurt of 12,000 upon release, and it dropped, because they do. But yeah, it seems steady around 2,000.
There is a.
I don't want to go and check Lawbreakers, but I don't think it had 2,000.
I think it's still at zero. There was a. I can't remember if. This probably isn't verified, but I think there was a point where they were saying that the only people playing Lawbreakers were the Lawbreakers staff themselves, trying to get people to play the game.
Okay, Lawbreakers at its height was 7,000 players, and Radical Heights at its height was 12,000. So.
The problem is, it's like. You've sort of. Well, companies have sort of missed the boat a little bit. I mean, the boat is still there, but you're going to have to make a fairly mighty jump to get into it. I mean, Fortnite really grabbed the bull by the horns and realised that this was a good opportunity to get a hold of, and it helped them out there. But now, if you have a go now, you're going to have to really, really come up with a good product. Otherwise, it's just people are just going to go back to Fortnite and PUBG.
I'm not actually sure that's necessarily true. I think definitely the one to be at the moment is Fortnite, but I think the way you do that is just having a slightly different gameplay. Like, Fortnite, you have to play third person. You have to play the buildy. They've added a few other game modes with the team-based one, but I reckon when we see the inevitable Call of Duty one at the end of the year, when we see God knows what else bring this mode in, because Battle Royale we've only really seen in release as full games. Because let's face it, at this point, Fortnite isn't about that, the wave-based PvE thing. I think when we get to the end of the year and we've got all of these new takes on the mode, they're not going to be as popular. This isn't like the MMOs, this isn't like the MOBAs, where they are self-contained games. It's a mode. It's something that people can iterate on and make their own.
So the next COD will have a Battle Royale mode?
I think it's basically all but confirmed at this
point. The thing is I mean, I'm not a video games developer. I'm not exactly that creatively minded either, despite being a writer. But I can't. When I sort of I think about a Call of Duty or even a Battlefield, because I think there's rumors about Battlefield doing one as well, I can't, in my mind, imagine it being a satisfying small game mode on its own. But then, you know, I might be biased because I'm not a massive fan of PUBG or Fortnite. So, I mean, I played PlayerUnknown's for about 2 weeks, and then, yeah, that was about it for me, really.
I don't see the draw of playing against other people. I like playing with other people, but I get it. You killed me within 30 seconds.
I think it's like the peak of, well, I say peak, it's not an eSport, but like it's the peak of competitive gaming, isn't it? Because it's not just like you, for example, on like TF2, you and 12 others have beaten a team of 12 others. It's you versus 99 other people. You're better than 99 other people. That draws people into it. But I'm too lazy to be better than 99 other people. That dopamine rush doesn't have the same effect on me when it comes to that. I don't see the payoff of having to like spend an hour crawling through like grass and hiding behind trees just to get that.
I suppose you're right, because King of the Ring in WWE is everyone v everyone, and that's to prove you're the best wrestler.
I think that's one of the things I've really liked about playing Radical Heights is I don't think I've been in a game for more than about 15 minutes, and I've got to the top 10 a few times. The games are ridiculously short in comparison to even Fortnite. I think I've been in games like nearly 40 minutes long.
I mean, perhaps, yeah, that might be the case if you can create a very quick injection style Battle Royale mode that doesn't mean you have to spend hours driving across an empty map or things like that. I think, yeah, perhaps if the survival aspect is removed from the game mode, like you experience with PUBG, sort of anyway, then yeah, maybe we'll see something that's a bit more interesting.
Maybe you could have Battle Royale, but your teams of like 12.
Well, that's something. Fortnite has the 50v50 mode that is actually very popular, apparently. I know a lot of people have been playing it. I don't really get it. It seems like it's just still you versus everyone you see. It's just sometimes your bullets will go through them and they won't shoot you. They're still like enemies, effectively, because you have no idea what the fuck they're doing. And everyone just sort of runs off in random directions and there's no real team to it. Not until you get to right to the end, at least.
I think we've spent long enough dissecting Battle Royale. You also mentioned Stardew Valley, or your addiction's getting you down?
I mean, it's not getting me down, because that game is wholesome and pure and great. But
who are you romancing?
Emily. I always tell myself I'm going to go for someone else, and then I just default into talking to Emily all the time. So
she's your waifu.
I got her to 8 stars before the end. 8 stars, 8 hearts before the end of summer 1. So yeah,
that's a fair amount of effort. I spend year 1 just like maximizing profits and getting all the town hall stuff.
Oh, I'm at the end of autumn 1 and I have like 2 million just in my bank. It potatoes in spring, just so much money. So much money. But yeah.
I'll try that.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is I saw Ready Player One at the weekend, and that film is not as bad as the book.
For those who don't know Ready Player One?
So Ready Player One is a book about 80s nostalgia, written from the perspective of someone who only remembers about 30 minutes of 80s.
And yeah, I suppose if you take that book, self-indulgent, and if anyone is not aware of the trope, Marty Stew is basically a main character who can do everything and never gets anything wrong. The main character of Ready Player One is basically the epitome of that. He solves every single problem with just a handy MacGuffin he has lying around, or whatever. But yeah, if you take a book that's like based off of poorly remembered 80s nostalgia, 80s and 90s nostalgia, and then get one of the most successful directors of the 80s and 90s to direct it, you know, Spielberg probably remembers a lot more than the author did. And so he injects his own stuff into it.
A lot of the things that gets referenced in the book that are not even mentioned in the film are Spielberg films. There's a huge thing about Jaws, there's a huge thing about E.T. None of it is in the film at all. Spielberg basically just cut himself out of the 80s.
No.
But I thought the directing was actually very poor. I thought it was one of the... there was a lot of decisions that... I don't know if it was him, necessarily, but a lot of the decisions were... So, at the start of the book, that you sort of introduced to the Oasis, which is this big... It's basically the internet, but in VR. And they put the headset on, and it reads Oasis, and then Ready Player One. And I go into the film thinking that's the most perfect title card you could possibly ever have. But the film's title card is a black screen with white text that says Ready Player One. After that exact scene has happened, just none of the text is there.
But does it not fade?
No.
Well, does it fade into it? Or?
No, the thing cuts to a black screen, Ready Player One fades in, and then it cuts to the next thing. It seems to me like someone forgot to put that in until like the last minute, and they're like, oh wait, we didn't put a title in this, just slap it in there at about 5 minutes, that'll be fine. The other thing that they reference a lot of 80s things, and they're very careful with their references that they don't touch other references, and it's fine for most of them, but the one that really annoyed me is they reference the Holy Hand Grenade from Monty Python from the Holy Grail, which is a nice nod because they had to cut... There's a big bit in the book that's about that film. They have to cut that because it's boring as fucking film. It was bad in the book. It would be worse in film. But he... Basically, the main character buys a holy hand grenade. Later on in the film, he uses it. And I'm expecting, after years of video games that have holy hand grenades in, that go, hallelujah, as they explode, he throws this, I'm expecting it, and it just blows up. And there's no music, there's nothing. It's just exceptionally disappointing. I think they really missed a trick there. They could have just referenced Worms or any other holy hand grenade in every other video game ever, and it would have made that scene so much better.
I suppose they're just going for the Monty Python version. Did that one make hallelujah noise before it exploded?
I don't think so.
As I remember, I have not seen Holy Grail for a long time. It didn't really explode. It just kind of just smoked a bit, and everyone sort of just fell over. That might have just been
Did it at least count to three before he threw it?
No, he just grabbed it out of his inventory and sort of just threw it.
You're gonna make the reference.
Yep. Speaking of references, and this has got to be, I'm sure this must be a licensing thing, but they reference Take On Me and Video Killed the Radio Star by name in the film. Neither song appears in the film. And it would have literally, the song for the credits would have been perfect to be Video Killed the Radio Star. It would have literally been perfect. It's not. It's I can't remember the name of the song. It's the one from Tom Hanks slides across the... Tom Cruise big. Even slide...
Oh. I said big because you said Tom Hanks.
Yeah, sorry.
Slides.
Tom Cruise slides across the floor in his socks and underpants. It's that song that they do the
Risky
credits
business.
To. Yeah. It just feels... It feels like a film of lost, missed opportunities.
You know that... The whole basically theme of the last season of South Park with the member berries.
I don't watch South Park.
Okay.
No.
Well, basically, it was all about how the government was controlling people by creating a type of fruit that would ask people if they remember things from their past, and so people were driven by nostalgia and made stupid decisions, like voting in Trump, for example. And basically, the member berries would, like, as you're about to eat them, they'd be like, oh, do you remember Star Wars? Oh, remember the Death Star? Oh, remember that? That was great. So it seems like that film is basically just remember how cool this was? Let's shove in as much as possible.
To be honest, it isn't really, because the things it really pushes are modern references. Like, Tracer is in almost every single scene. Oh. And I'm not even kidding. There's one.
I mean, I love Overwatch, and that puts me off the film.
It's really strange. There's a bit where there's like a huge army fighting, and it just cuts to a Tracer for no reason, really.
Is she voiced, or is she just there?
No, she's just there.
Tracer as in Overwatch character.
Yes, Tracer as in Overwatch character Tracer. It seemed weird that some of the references they make had. There's Mechagodzilla in it, but.
That is kind of 80s.
That is 80s, but it's not really in it. Like, Tracer probably has 6 times the screen time and she doesn't have any lines or is even a named character in it, because. It's not Tracer, it's a person pretending to be Tracer. But if you just turn off your brain and don't remember the 80s, like I literally can't because I wasn't born for 6 years after they ended, yeah, it's a good film. It's just mindless and daft, but it's a good time. It's just that they could have made that film so much better.
I think you described the way to watch a Transformers movie if you turn off your brain and don't remember the 80s. What's a Transformer? Oh, this movie. But yes, we've spent far too long on movies in this video game podcast.
It's a slow news week.
I haven't even spoken about the games I've been playing. Before we get on the news, I got around to finishing Far Cry 5, the main story. I've still not found all of the side quests and collectibles and stuff, but I'm about 90% there.
So you're going through and doing all the side quests before you finish?
No, I was trying to do that, but then I got bored doing that, so I went and finished.
What did you think of the ending? Because I know Nikki wanted to talk to you about it. So
I have spoken to Nikki. I don't want to spoil it by giving anything at all away. There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, it's an ending to a video game.
I didn't see it coming. I'll say that. I've also been playing Pizza Titan Ultra. The review went up a few days ago. I gave it a 10 out of 10. Because it's a great game and I literally found nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I need to get on that because that game looks great.
And I finished Metro 2033 Redux. I hated the library and I hated those friggin' spider bugs.
As predicted. Did you stare down some librarians in the end?
The opportunity didn't really come up. I think... Yeah, I did stare down one, but it wasn't in the part where I didn't die, so I didn't write about it. Like, I stared one down, and then another one decided to kill me, so...
Yeah, the library's not fun.
No, it was friggin' horrible. And I've started Metro Last Light Redux because I really got in the groove with Metro. The start of that game's it's good. I'm enjoying it still. Giving me high hopes for Metro Exodus that comes out later this year.
I forgot that's a game that's coming out this year. Ah, I'm excited for the end of the year now. Yeah.
And the middle of the year because of Spider-Man.
I still don't have a PlayStation, so I probably won't get Spider-Man until next year.
You're gonna buy a PlayStation for Spider-Man. Do it.
I mean, if you have a spare £300 lying around.
Of course I do. I'm a father of four. Look at all my disposable income. Speaking of income, we'll get on to the news. Konami are ending their partnership with UEFA after 10 years. This means if there's any more Pro Evolution Soccers, they won't be able to use anyone's name or team name, I believe.
Yeah, they won't be able to use the competitions, so the UEFA Champions League and the Europa League. I don't think neither of them will be able to be used. Which sort of begs the question, what's the point then? Because they were the two competitions that Konami had licenses for. I think they've got licenses for like Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund. But yeah, it sort of seems like the first tolling of the bell for Pro Evolution Soccer. FIFA's just been absolutely like destroying it in terms of sales over the for a good few years now. So perhaps, you know, they're winding it down and going to turn it into a nice profitable pachinko machine.
Pro Evolution Soccer, the pachinko. Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what the P stands for.
Pachinko.
Stop doing their jobs for you, Alex.
Well, their main franchises are Metal Gear Solid and Pro Evolution Soccer, and their latest Metal Gear Solid hasn't really set the world afire.
I thought that's what it literally did, isn't it? A post-apocalyptic thing.
Post-apocalyptic pairs, yeah, that'd be something. The annoying thing is that basically, if that is the case, it just gives FIFA more of a monopoly. Or EA more of a monopoly, rather. Which gives them less incentive to actually do anything. Not that they were doing much between years, anyway.
Well, they also have Silent Hill, which they're not releasing games based in. Zone of Enders, again, no games. Frogger, that'll make a good pachinko machine. Gradius, Contra... Sudoku. No, none of these they are actually publishing games about. Bomberman had one, had a Switch game, I suppose.
The thing that I don't understand is the quote from the senior director of brand and business development for Konami. He said that they're shifting their focus into other areas, though they're continuing to explore alternative ways UEFA and Konami can continue to work together. Surely the only way they can work together is through a licensing deal. Is there any other way can you think of?
Yeah, Konami is going to license PES to UEFA, and UEFA is going to develop the next PES.
They'd probably make a better game.
So, is this the death of Pro Evolution Soccer? Or do you think they'll try one without UEFA's involvement?
I think that there's guaranteed to be one this year, and when it doesn't sell because it doesn't have anything anyone wants in it, they won't make another one. I think that's partly why they did the Metal Gear Survive, because no one bought it, so they have no reason to go back to the Metal Gear Solid franchise. To me personally, it seems like a stockholder pleaser, in the sense that, oh, we made a thing and it didn't sell, so we don't want to waste more of your money.
Yeah, we made a Metal Gear game and it didn't sell, and neither did Pro Evolution Soccer. So let's just, you know, stop making games.
But look how much money we're making off of these pachinko machines.
Welcome, Puce.
Hello.
He has just turned up, listeners, so just in time to talk about Payday 2's Spring Break event. Which we've been getting retweets and likes on Twitter like mad about this post that we did we put on the site. Overkill is hosting an event for Payday 2 for the next 5 days. It was a 7-day period, but this was 2 days ago. And new content is being released in daily chunks for free. Yeah, Spring Break is an annual event in March-April time. They also have Crime Fest in October. Is anyone a Payday 2 fan?
No, it's one of those games that I've never got around to playing. With it being a team-based kind of competitive thing, it's not really something that's ever appealed to me. But it's one of those games that's always been popular, even with all the drama surrounding it.
I had to mute notifications on Steam from Payday 2 because I would continuously get overlay notifications telling me that some competition or some event or another was happening. So that's my input. I've maybe put about 5 hours into it. Yeah, it's a enjoyable game, but not for me, really.
I'm just confused as to why Payday 2 is still getting this much attention from Overkill. Bearing in mind they're supposed to be neck deep up in The Walking Dead, which is supposed to come out this year, and no one has seen any gameplay or at all.
Well, if you remember, I said that there were 12,000 peak players on Radical Heights. There are currently 35,000 people playing Payday 2, according to Steam charts. So that's why it's still getting attention, because people are still playing it by the bucket loads.
Yeah, I get that. It just seems strange that Overkill always say that they're such a small team, but they always seem to stretch themselves so thin.
Well, they've got the team working on Payday 2, and they've got Dave in marketing working on Walking Dead.
That would make sense, because I'm literally on their site now, and there is not even a screenshot of a game that's supposed to come out in, like, 4 months.
Oof.
I think they've only kind of shown the key art for that, haven't they? Which is basically generic Walking Dead logo.
They have trailers, but this is clearly not in-game footage. Yeah, I'm just sliding through
there
now, this is just pre-rendered.
There's been a developer diary, developer diary number one was released late last month, and talking about one of the towns, and yeah, it's pre-rendered, and some screenshots of it on a screen in the office. It's worrying, you're right.
I mean, to be fair, if they're releasing in fall this year, they're definitely releasing next year because of Red Dead Redemption 2. No one's going to go up against that. Not even Overkill. Or even The Walking Dead. So.
Yeah, but The Walking Dead's a mega franchise. Oh, wait, no, it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely dwindling now, isn't it? Popularity. To be honest, I can't even remember where I actually stopped watching it, but
I read the comics in batches. I've stayed away from the TV show because people say it's good at the start and the end of each season, but the middle's awful, so why bother watching any of it? Since we've clearly stopped talking about Payday 2, our next news story, Valve has acquired Campo Santo, the developers of Firewatch.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, because on the sort of announcement post for it, it basically sounded like nothing's going to change except we're moving offices, basically. And, oh yeah, the game's now going to be published by Valve.
Yeah, from what I was reading, and this might just be how they wanted to phrase it, but this the acquiring seems more of a we've bought their contracts rather than the company. I think Campo Santo sort of seems to have they've dropped it and have just all moved to Valve to continue working on the thing they were working on before, just with the resources of one of the biggest companies in gaming.
In the Valley of Gods is what they're working on. So that'll probably be exclusively available through Steam.
At least it's not got a 3 in the title, so there is a good chance of it still coming out.
Yeah, it's not Firewatch 2.
The title is 5 words long, though, so that's 2 more than I think Valve can handle.
Yeah, I mean, good on them. It's obviously more security for them as a team. That can only be a good thing. Hopefully it means that they get more resources to do more extravagant things going forward. I mean, they've always done little, smaller projects so far, but who knows what they can actually do with a few more resources behind them.
Now, to get no one's hype up, but if you were to pick a team to make a new Half-Life game or a new Portal game, I'd pick Campo Santo. They're up there on that list. They know how to tell a story through environment and through just people talking.
Yes.
They're the right people to get on, I think.
I agree. I agree. They're good at telling a story. There's just not much to Firewatch. There's no intricate gameplay mechanics, no port guns.
Yeah, mechanically it's quite straightforward, but
Then that's why you stick those people onto Valve. They've obviously got the ideas because they've come up with great games. Like even In the Valley of the Gods sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I can't wait for it. It does look really good.
And
I suppose that's true. They already have the technology. Oh, just put this code in, and there's your portal gun.
And if they've got the people who still work at Valve and must be doing something, they just take them and make a game with the experience that Valve has.
They're busy trying to justify VR department.
And or making Dota skins.
I think that the pitfall they need to avoid is making Firewatch 2. Because they've done that. And I think that they said this back when Firewatch was still being talked about a lot. Firewatch was their thing and now they're done with it. That's why they've moved on to something else.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is with that, it was a very standalone... I can't really see how you could do a sequel, really. It was a very standalone thing. I didn't agree with the ending, but I thought the game itself was excellent. And I thought it said all it needed to say, really.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Our final news piece on this mini-cast... because we're almost at 40 minutes. GOG.com, or GOG.com, depending on how you like to pronounce it, has introduced user profiles after all these years. So now you can see what your friends are playing, see their achievements, share status updates, that sort of thing.
My question is, this wasn't already a thing? I thought that's what GOG Universe was.
Galaxy.
Same difference.
Yeah, I think it's a bit weird. It's it looks nice enough, but do people really actually use these things very much?
I went in and had a look at it and changed my settings and wallpaper.
Wait, is this on the site or in the app?
On the site.
Oh. That seems weird. Do you have to have the site open for it to register what you're playing, or does it only pick up GOG games?
It only picks up GOG games. I assume it picks them up from the Galaxy launcher.
I'd imagine so, yeah.
So this is a thing that already existed. I'm not going mad. They've just moved it over to the site. Because you've been able to tell what people are playing through Galaxy for ages.
Yeah, I think it's basically an expanded version of the... because you can see time played and what people were playing in the Galaxy client. I think it's just basically an expanded version of that with a few more things, like it's got things like milestones for time played and like total amount of achievements, that kind of thing. It's basically like the Steam profile page, but a bit simpler and slightly nicer looking.
Now you can share it with people rather than them having to see you on GOG Galaxy.
I really hope they just let the intern do that and that no actual resources went onto this.
It does seem a weird thing to add after all this time for not really very much benefit. I suppose it's cool as a thing in itself, but it's a bit of a weird thing.
Right, we've reached the end of all of our news, and has anyone got anything they want to talk about? Puce, you joined late. Would you like to tell us what games you've been playing, such as any that might have come out today?
Yes, I've spent most of last week playing BattleTech, the turn-based strategy game from Harebrained Schemes, based on the tabletop game, and it's excellent. It's my favourite game of the year so far. It's I suppose the Cliff's Note version of the game is it's XCOM with mechs in space in a Game of Thrones style sort of opera setting. Except that kind of does it a disservice, because the actual turn-based mechanics are a lot more in-depth than in XCOM. There's a lot more things to think about. And it's if you like the thought of stomping around in great massive mechs, shooting arms and limbs off other robots, then it's the best game for that so far in recent times.
It's great. I've only just got past the tutorial missions, actually, but it's scratching an itch I've had for a long time for a very decent mech strategy game, and it's given me the nostalgia from when I played Mech Warrior 3 all those years and years and years ago.
Yeah, the one thing that struck me was the kind of complexity of the missions. It's like even the first tutorial mission, it's way longer than you think it's going to be, and it twists and turns a lot more than it needs to. There's a lot more things happen than what you'd expect.
My one complaint is just that a lot of it's like a lot of stuff gets thrown at you straight away. Like I'm still trying to, a lot of it gets thrown at you without explicitly telling you, and the tutorials are hidden within dialogue with some of the characters you interact with. So it's basically a long list of tutorial text sections to read through, and I think that they could have explained the mechanics a little bit better via the tutorial.
Yeah, there are some things where it's because to sort of jump in and play, it's quite simple. It's very click to move, click to attack. There you go. You can sort of get up and running. But a lot of the there's a lot more depth to all the systems, and it is kind of nice that they've kind of got that stuff in there in the NPCs for you to discover that way, so you can read at your own pace, kind of thing, and just and get the complexity as you're ready for it. But it does, like you say, there was probably a better way that they could expose that during actual missions. But on the other hand, it's kind of nice that they didn't bog the missions down with stopping every 5 seconds saying, this is how X, Y, and Z works. But yeah, there's a definitely a learning curve there, but it's quite easy to just get into and start playing, which is nice.
Now you said that the tutorial takes place in the dialogue. Is it a case of, now you know you have to press X to jump, right? Or is it more streamlined than that?
Yeah, there's no it's like the very first couple of missions in the game. They it takes you through the basic premise, the setup of the game starts with a coup, with a hostile takeover, and it teaches you basic movement and stuff under the premise of your mech's just been repaired. You better test the systems, boyo, sort of thing. But it's the more in-depth combat mechanics. Like there's your mechs can overheat, which happens when you fire energy weapons in specifically. And when your mech overheats, you then take damage over time. But in certain situations, it's handy to overheat because it's like if you're taking on a particularly strong mech, it might be worth you taking that extra damage just so that you can get a really big burst of, like, with all your weapons out the next turn. But there are ways to mitigate the heat. It's like, for example, if you stand in water, like, you don't overheat as much. Or depending on the environment of the planet that you're on, if you're on, say, a polar planet, like, it's very icy and snowy, then you're obviously not going to get as much heat buildup. But there's also things where that aren't quite as obvious. Like if you're on a lunar biome, you actually you don't build up heat any faster, but you also don't. It doesn't dissipate. It doesn't go away, because in a vacuum there's no dissipation, and that's not exactly obvious. But you can find that stuff out through the tooltips by hovering over the biomes when you go to take a mission. So a lot of the not sort of nitty gritty stuff is in tooltips, and it's all there for you to find, but it's not explicitly just halting you every 5 seconds to tell you about things. It does expect a little bit of proactiveness on your part for finding stuff out.
Okay, and I believe you were playing Defiance 2050.
Yeah, I had a little look at it. I've not put a lot of time into it, but I thought I'd go through the tutorial stuff and do the first couple of missions just to get myself back into it. So far it essentially looks like it's just a graphical update. But the thing is, it's that long since I played the original Defiance. In my head it kind of looks how I remember it looking, but I know that it's definitely looking sharper than it did before. The only other obvious thing that stands out is that they've clearly rejigged all the talent trees and things, so the actual process of leveling up will probably be quite different. As to how whether all the missions are the same and things, the first couple of hours that I played was still exactly the same. They were the same missions as what I remembered, and they even had the same intro with introducing the characters that they ended up introducing in the or using in the TV show, however short-lived that was. So they've not actually changed the introduction or the setting at all. It's basically exactly the same, apart from visuals.
So they've given it the Secret World Legends go.
Yeah, it does feel kind of like that. They haven't messed with the game mechanics very much, but the gunplay always kind of felt all right in Defiance. It was no like AAA first person shooter level quality, but the shooting at enemies and stuff always felt okay in that game, so, and it feels the same.
Okay, and with that I think we've exhausted all of our topics. Thanks for listening to this mini cast. You can find us and tweet to us on Twitter at Grincast, and you can find GameGrin on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. Remember to check out our Twitch stream from 8 p.m. BST every single day, and you can find this very podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or GameGrin.com. And while you're at it, game on.